Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back. It's Nagler's Never Right. We're almost to OTAs. Almost to another checkpoint in the offseason. That's right. Free agency has come and gone. The draft has come and gone. Phase two of the offseason program is in full effect for the Green Bay Packers there at 1265 Lombardi. And next week, the Packers will start working on the football field, the entire squad. Still just helmets and shorts, no pads yet, obviously, throughout this off-season portion. But start to get a look at some of the rookies mixed in with some of the veterans. Start to get an idea of who is running where and with which units. Start to unravel the mysteries surrounding the 2017 Green Bay Packers. But in the meantime, it's Nagler's Never Right here on PackersNews.com. How are you, everyone? I hope you're having a great day wherever you are. I am currently in my living room with the back door wide open onto my patio, so you may hear some birds chirping, some cars going by. It's a gorgeous day here in New York City. I hope it's gorgeous wherever you are. And even if it isn't, that means you're settling in and listening to Nagler's Never Right at PackersNews.com. Lots to get to. Let's start with, I got an email this week. From Bob Fulbrecht, I think is how you pronounce it. Bob, thanks for the email. I'm only answering it here because he specifically said it's for the podcast. Usually I use emails on my weekly mailbag that goes up Friday afternoons at PackersNews.com, but I thought he said, question for your podcast is how he started. So here we are on the podcast answering your question, Bob. And Bob asks, why is the injury issue not addressed? Year after year, Packers are praised about their ability to play with injuries. Why not try playing without so many injuries? The training staff, strength coaches, etc. program needs to be fixed or more likely replaced. Bob, I like this question because it echoes what I hear quite a little bit, not only during the offseason, but especially during the season. Injuries strike and it feels overwhelming, especially when you're kind of so dialed in to one team. I think NFL fans in general, and Packer fans are no different in this regard, whatever team you're cheering for or rooting for, with a very rare exception, it feels like your team is beset by injuries year in and year out. We get to camp and hitting starts and pads go on, and across the league, every summer it happens. Injuries start piling up and people start talking about, oh my gosh, there's so many injuries. Yes, there are so many injuries every year in the NFL. As players are fond of saying, the injury rate in the NFL is 100%. It's just a question of what guys can play through, what teams allow guys to play through. Obviously, it varies a little bit from team to team. The Packers do tend to be on the conservative side when it comes to getting guys back out on the field, except in some cases. leaps to mind Eddie Lacy last year running out there against Dallas on a gimpy ankle, which I contend to this day he had no business playing on. But for the most part, like I said, I know it feels like the Packers are severely injured every year. And oh my gosh, shouldn't the training staff, the strength and conditioning staff be held to account, etc.? And every year I say the same thing. And Bob, I know this is probably not what you want to hear, but I'm going to say it again. The Packers have done more work on this than anyone else. They have done so much work in the area of injury prevention, rest and recovery, nutrition as it pertains to performance. A couple years ago, when it was 2014, when McCarthy first made the big switch to their practice schedule / regime, there was a noticeable downtick in injuries, in games that were lost by starters. Speaking of that idea, that brings me to Football Outsiders, which does every year, they do a chart. They go through all of the games lost by starters, and they go through and they tally up. And this is a very, very rudimentary explanation, but they have what's called adjusted games lost. They don't just add up the number of games that are missed. They're able to quantify, how many teams were affected by injuries based on two things: injuries to starters, injury replacements and situational reserves, and injured players who take the field, who are usually playing with a reduced ability Say, for example, Eddie Lacy going out there with that gimpy ankle. They do a lot of work on this. And the Packers actually come in pretty much at the middle of the pack each and every year. And 2016 was no different. They were smack dab right in the middle at number 15 for adjusted games lost around the NFL. I can't really do it justice just by talking about it. I highly recommend you go to Football Outsiders and search for adjusted games lost and read their explanation. You'll see what I'm talking about. And you'll see how, you know, what I'm saying about the Packers, it feels so kind of fatalistic every year because they do, of course, yes, every team deals with injuries. Now, some more than others. And yes, you know, a big part of making a championship run these days is about the health of your football team and about when they are healthy. You know, you can suffer a lot of injuries early and then kind of right the ship and ride it out and then, you know, hit a good patch later on in the year. The Packers kind of did that in 2010, you know, where they ended up with 15 guys on injured reserve, you know, and a lot of that happened kind of the first half of the season. And the second half of the year, they had guys like James Starks come along. And, you know, they were able to weather that storm, so to speak, and rode it to a championship. Now, obviously, that's not a recipe for success each and every year. You don't want that to become the norm. That's not something you want to replicate every season. But this idea that the Packers, and specifically their strength and conditioning staff, have to be held to account. No one takes, you know, this stuff more seriously than the Packers, than Ted Thompson and Mike McCarthy. And they have actually been on the forefront as far as, you know, trying to solve the riddle of how to stay healthy as a football team. But, you know, let's face facts. It's a violent game. The NFL, down in, down out, is a car crash. These guys, you know, walk away from, you know, 50 or so car crashes every week. And, yeah, guys get hurt and guys miss games. That's part of the league, and that's part of kind of the puzzle that teams are trying to solve. And I think the Packers are actually on the forefront when it comes to that. But, Bob, it's a great question. I do get asked this all the time. That's why I wanted to address it. And I think, like I said, I think a big part of it is because, you know, it's funny, it's interesting. I really noticed it once I came on the Packers beat because I had been covering the league for, you know, as a whole for a long time. Obviously, I was still running a Packers website over there at Cheesehead TV, but I'd been covering the league for so long. I kind of noticed, you know, I kind of took for granted that, yeah, everybody's injured. And yes, year in and year out, there's a team here or there that is less injured. I think the Bengals last year are a great example of that. I mean, I think they got to like week 14 or something like that without one starter missing a game or something ridiculous like that. They had nobody on their injury report 1 week. I mean, that's unheard late in the season, and that's unheard of in the NFL. And those are anomalies. You know, that's not a consistent kind of data that you can look at and go, okay, that's what this team is doing right. When you pull back and you look at the NFL, you'll see that every team is dealing with injuries and every fan base is frustrated by them. But the Packers are really no more special in that regard than any other team. But like I said, Bob, it is a great question, and I do get asked about it quite a little bit. I also wanted to talk a little bit about something that my friend Greg Rosenthal wrote about over on NFL.com. He took a swipe at the old projecting the starting lineups on offense and defense. And I really appreciated his approach because too often these days when people are talking about starting lineups in and around the NFL, and I say in because there are definitely people in the league who still do this, too often people are kind of stuck in the past when it comes to base concepts and the need to say, oh, they run a 3-4 defense, I have to talk about three defensive linemen and four linebackers and two corners and two safeties. And Greg kind of totally eschewed that. And, you know, he wrote three wide receivers and three cornerbacks on both sides of the ball for the starting lineups. And I got to say, that is the way to go about it in today's NFL, because more often than not, that's what teams are doing. The response by defenses to offensive innovation on the, you know, as far as the spread formations that we've seen, the proliferation of, you know, personnel groupings kind of being spread all throughout the field and defenses kind of countering that with not only with extra corners, but also with safeties that have doubled as linebackers. We've seen that from Morgan Burnett, you know, especially last year, but we've seen it a couple other places around the league. And that is the way to start thinking about this. I mean, when the Packers are in what they call, you know, what we call nickel, you know, upwards of 75 to 80% of the time, it's about time we start calling that their base defense. You know, and I think that's a good kind of window into why maybe the Packers prioritized secondary pieces over pass rushers in this year's draft. The need to get, you know, they talked a lot about the need to get faster, but just versatility and an ability to put a bunch of guys out there to counter all of these multiple looks from offenses. I think, you know, that's the way the league has been going. That's the way the league will continue to go. And I'm glad that Greg kind of acknowledged that in his writing. Now, I'm just going to pick on him a little bit. In his piece, I linked to it in the Morning Buzz. You can check PackersNews.com. I've got it up on the Morning Buzz this morning, along with a bunch of other stuff that you'll probably be interested in if you're a Packers fan, which I'm assuming you are if you're listening to this podcast, because if you're not a Packers fan and you're still listening, I got to question your mental acumen. But getting back to Greg's piece, a couple of things caught my eye. Actually, one in particular, but two, you know, I think he wrote something about the cornerback position, which I really agreed with. He listed kind of as his kind of initial kind of guesswork as far as who we might see starting their week one against the Seahawks. You know, he listed Kevin King and Devon House, which I think we all kind of, you know, I know that's what Rob Domofsky wrote over at ESPN as far as his opening day guess. But he also included Ladarius Gunter, which, you know, when I tweeted this out, I got a couple people questioning it. And I said, you know, I think it makes sense in the sense that we don't really know how any of this is going to play out. And Greg writes in his piece, the Packers cornerback group is unlike any other in the league. The top five players could wind up in almost any order on the week one depth chart, and it wouldn't be a surprise. And I very much agree with that. It's why it's kind of the most intriguing battle heading into training camp, because any one of these guys could step to the fore with a strong camp. And could one of those guys be Ladarius Gunter? Absolutely. I know a lot of fans only remember him getting torched in the playoffs by the likes of Dez Bryant or Julio Jones. But, you know, what they don't see is a lot of tape that he produced last year, which showed him playing some pretty good football down in and down out. Now, could it end up being Demaryius Randall? Could it end up being Quentin Rollins? Yeah, absolutely. Could it end up being an undrafted guy? Sure. You know? But, you know, it's the one spot on this roster where I think it looks wide open. And it's really going to come down to how guys perform day in and day out during training camp and how they perform when given opportunities in preseason games. But, like I said, I liked the way Greg approached it. The one kind of real quibble I had with it is he listed only one inside linebacker, which I understand, like we were just talking about in regards to kind of multiple people doing multiple things, you know, having only one inside linebacker designated as your starter makes sense. But he listed Joe Thomas in that role, which I get if you're looking at it, you know, from the idea of we want to put as many kind of athletes on the field as possible. I think Joe Thomas did a good job, especially early in the year last year, of showing he's probably the best moving sideline to sideline out of the three inside guys they have. But I will say, I would tend to think Blake Martinez probably gets the first nod there. If he makes the expected jump from year one to year two, if he can take the kind of step we saw from Jake Ryan that he made from year one to year two, I think Martinez is probably your leader in the clubhouse. Now, that said, and of course, this is just me guessing. This is me blabbing on a Wednesday afternoon in the middle of spring. But, you know, nothing is going to stop Jake Ryan from taking that spot either. I don't want to, you know, kind of belittle his chances. Because I was watching the Giants playoff game a couple days ago. And man, he played a whale of a game. And I think people kind of forget the jump he made from year one to year two. I don't think it's talked about a whole lot. But he's a real possibility as far as somebody who could kind of emerge. Maybe, you know, none of these guys are ever going to be Luke Kuechly or Ray Lewis in his prime or anything. Nobody's expecting an all-pro performance from any of these guys. But I do think, you know, the potential is there for these guys to be pretty good. And I don't think they need to be world beaters in this defense, especially as they continue down the road of specialization and versatility from their secondary. You know, you got to think eventually Josh Jones is going to be seeing quite a little bit of snaps and maybe Bryce is in at safety while Morgan Burnett is dropped down as a linebacker. So, you know, it's a question of mixing and matching and Dom Capers trying to find the right combinations and possibly, you know, game planning comes into it week to week as far as what the opponent likes to do and how best to utilize their personnel versus various opponents. But that is all stuff that obviously will get played out as the offseason goes along into training camp. And speaking of which, I will be in Green Bay for minicamp next month in the middle of June. So I'm really looking forward to getting a look at some of these guys live on the field. And then I will be in Green Bay for the start of training camp. I think I'm going to come in right before, right before the shareholders meeting. And then I'll stick around probably through the first 3 weeks or so of training camp. So if you're in the Green Bay area, hit me up. Let me know when you're going to be around because I think I may have some kind of tweet up during camp. I think it'd be a fun thing to do, get a bunch of people together, have some beers, and talk some Packers football. In the meantime, keep checking PackersNews.com. Keep checking it out daily. Ryan Wood has just started a series on kind of the main things to look at, main focus points for the Packers heading into OTAs. The first one dropped yesterday. It was on Ty Montgomery and his place in the offense and what, you know, a starting running back in the Packers offense even looks like these days. He'll have a few more up throughout this week. So make sure you're checking each and every day at PackersNews.com. I'll be back next week with more here at Nagler's Never Right. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks so much for downloading. And hey, if the spirit moves you, leave me a little something-something on iTunes. I got a nice review up there, and I hear tell a good way to kind of boost your rating on iTunes is to get some decent reviews. So if you could say something nice, it'd be appreciated. If you want to say something not so nice, it's appreciated too. Honestly, it is, because I understand I may not be everybody's cup of tea, but as long as I'm making you think, as long as I'm making you kind of, think about the Packers in maybe a different way than you had before, I'm happy if you challenge me on it. That's what we're here for. And keep listening, keep downloading, keep reading. Thank you so much, everyone. We'll talk to you next week here on Nagler's Never Right.